Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Tywin Kelly. Tywin is a recent college graduate living in Seattle. Currently, he works at Pixvana, a VR video software company turned 2D video management software company. Outside of work, he's a student of filmmaking, computational photography, and cybernetics. He's also the son of Kevin. Hey, Tywin, how's it going?
Hey, hi.
Hi, Tywin. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, it's been many years since I've seen you, Tywin. I think you were much younger the last time we have actually chatted in person.
Yeah.
So it'll be really fun to like find out kind of what you're into. And I'm just intrigued that you're a student of cybernetics. What does that mean? Are you like going through like Norbert Wiener's books and stuff? Or
I am going through a phase of reading a bunch of these, I guess they call them new media artists as well these days, studying the intersection of art and technology. So I kind of hurriedly put that down as just like a casual term for being interested in how machines and humans interact, which is what I am interested in. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, good. I love all that stuff. So let's get started talking about your tools. Your first one is a way to download YouTube videos, which is something I always want to do too.
Yeah. And I do this often for my personal projects since I like to edit videos on the side. And something that I always do is download YouTube videos either for a some B-roll or just to actually capture the sound effects. Like I often just search like river sound effects just to add some foley to richen up a video. But one problem I always find with downloading YouTube videos is that the sites that I use often get shut down or they just migrate to another domain or something. And it's really inconsistent. So when I started working at Pixvana, a software engineer showed me this tool. It's basically a free command line tool. It's open source called YouTubeDL. And it's really, really simple. All you have to do is open your terminal, type in YouTubeDL and put in the URL of the video that you want, and it immediately starts downloading. And I found it to be the most consistent, and it's really, really fast. And you don't need to go through these websites where there's all these pop-ups for like, oh, they're trying to trick you to download this spyware,
right?
For instance. And so this is like super, super secure, open source, and it's constantly being updated is the other thing.
So I'm a little confused when you say open up terminal and type this in. Does this something that is sitting on, once you download, once you install it, we'll call it that, on your computer, is it there and you evoke it or you open it up each time you want to download? Or are you kind of like having to put this in each time you want to download a YouTube?
Yeah, it's a little confusing. It's basically like an application with no user interface.
Perfect.
And they do have user interface versions. They just get updated less frequently. And so I don't consider myself a very code literate person, but even I can work through this. And most of the time, I just Google like how do I download a MOV version of this video, and then someone on some forum has posted the exact line of code that you need. And so I say the learning curve is a little steep, but the payoff is great in the sense that you don't have to go through these kind of scary websites all the time, which you don't know what they're doing. And honestly, I think most of these websites that are doing this downloading of YouTube are running this exact software. So you're kind of just cutting to the bone by downloading it locally on your machine.
And I guess the question is like, why can't this just be like an app that you have on? Why isn't it just an app, a Mac app that you open up?
Yeah, that's I think legality is a question up in the air.
There is one that I use, and it's called Downie, Downie. And it's probably running that same command line program, but it's just a little, basically you open up the Downy app and then you just drag the URL of the YouTube video into the window and it downloads it onto your desktop. And it's completely foolproof. And I have it. I don't know how much it costs as like a standalone program. I subscribe to this service for $10 a month called SetApp. And it gives you access to like 100 different useful kind of utilities. And so it's a good one. If you don't feel like, you know, using command line or terminal window or something like that. But if you do, then you might as well get it for free if you're comfortable with doing it that way.
And I think there are a few other apps like Downy that I have used, but I tend not to use them just because they have some, the UI sometimes breaks. And so if you're comfortable at all with command line, I'd suggest this. And I like it because it's free and available all the time.
Very cool.
Okay. I'll have to try that. And when you do that, you get the entire video download. You're not just downloading a little section of it, right?
Yeah, you download the entire video. And there's, I think you use parameters you can set to only download from 5 seconds to 20 seconds, for instance. The other thing with this tool, which I think me personally, I've learned a lot about how YouTube works through this tool because they have a feature where you can list all the different versions of a video that are available. So like one YouTube video, obviously they have different qualities for different internet speeds. So if you have a better bandwidth, you can stream a higher quality video. But they also have a bunch of different codecs. And codecs are just ways that the videos are packaged and unpackaged. And this tool has made, like kind of unveiled this, I want to say like this codec war going on. There's just constant battle between who wants to be the most widely supported cross-platform format. And you'll see there's like basically every video on YouTube basically is comprised of 20 different videos because it has to play back on your Apple TV or your on Google Chrome or on an iPhone. There's all these different versions they have to make. And I think this tool kind of reveals that. It's a cool tool in the sense that it's like it teaches you something.
Oh, okay, cool. All righty.
Yeah, good. I like that. Thank you. Well, cool. That's a good one. What's next on your list, Tywin?
Let's see. Oh, the next one, Find My, as it's called now on the most recent iPhone update. It's an iPhone app where you can basically track the location.
It's a built-in iPhone app. You mean it comes with your iPhone,
yes,
right?
Yes, it comes by default. It's a native app. Every iPhone has it. And you can track the locations of friends that have consented to being tracked by you. And similarly, you can also track your devices. So like your Apple Watch or your anything Apple that you own, you can track in that app the location of it. So my roommate showed me this and she brought up the idea that 99% of the time she texts someone is because she wants to know where they are. And I was like, I do that as well. So I started tracking the location of my friends. And now whenever I'm home and I don't see where my roommate is, I check the app before I even text her and see, oh, she is out at a restaurant or something. And it's also good for the safety reasons. If you go out somewhere to an event, like a concert, you want to keep track of where your friends are as well.
And how like the resolution is like, you know, a couple meters?
I'd say, yeah, a couple meters. When I'm at home, our icons completely overlap. So,
right. And it kind of gives a little tag. The little pin is labeled with their name of who they are. I mean, do you have a map view where you see all the people that you're tracking?
Yeah, there's a map overview where you can see the location of everybody. If you tap into somebody, you kind of zoom in and see where their specific location is.
I found what's useful for me is, when my daughter wants me to pick her up somewhere and she's at a friend's house, I just find my phone to see where she is. And then you can like click on it and you can get the driving directions to get there to the house. So I don't need to ask her what the address is or anything like that. It's like super convenient.
Really? You can click on and get, it turns into, is it on Google? Is it on, it's on Apple Maps, I guess, assume.
Yeah. Yeah. It opens up the Apple Maps driving directions.
And does your daughter just turn it on when she wants a ride or does she leave it on?
they leave it on all the time, and they're fine with that. I think, you know, living in a big city, they kind of like us to be able to know where they are in case, you know, we need to pick them up or something. They've never been that worried about, like, you know, their privacy or anything like that, like where they're going to be. And you know, we do the same for them. They see where we are at all times too. So it works out really well. And it works out great when you're like on vacation somewhere, like, you know, when we go to Japan or something and someone's across town and you just see where they are and you can like get the subway route map and then you meet up with them.
Yeah. I know some parents or some kids who refuse to let their parents track them. So it's interesting to hear. I mean, Dad, I don't know if you have my location or not. I think I shared it with you. But
I haven't turned it on yet, so
okay, I'm fine with
it. I guess I could find you. I guess I could find you if I needed. But I'm wondering, Mark, whether you use it with anyone else but your kids.
No, just my family, just the members of my family only. And I don't. There have been times, like temporarily, that I'll share it with like my parents. I wouldn't mind having them see all the time, but I just, you know, you can like click, when you're doing a chat message, you click, I think, on the info and you can like share your address with someone and it defaults to like an hour, a couple of hours. It's like if we're driving to see them in Arizona or something and they just want to see where we are on our way over there.
Uh-huh. So it is something you can kind of turn off and on pretty easily?
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. Pretty easily, yeah.
Okay.
And the other aspect, I think I forgot to bring up, of what I like about it is it has a feature where you can be notified when the friend leaves a certain location or is near your location. And this is really helpful because I have a friend who comes over a lot and sometimes it's a little unpredictable when he gets here. So I set a little notification about when he leaves his house and is near mine and tells me when I have to come down to the entrance of the apartment and let him in. And that's something I use all the time.
That's cool.
And you can set that boundary. Is that pretty easy to set the boundary of, is it like,
there's actually no, I'm not sure what the boundary actually is. It just, I put it in quotes, a smart boundary. It just sort of, it does, it's the Apple, they hide the exact number, but it seems to work.
Okay, great. So tell us about your third, tool, which is a utility AV cart.
So my third cool tool is the it's basically a push utility audio video cart with little casters on the bottom, and I use it as a standing desk for my desktop PC. And so it's I originally got it because I had a virtual reality setup and I lived in a small apartment, so I didn't want to take over the entire communal public space that my roommate and I shared. So I wanted something that you could sort of modularly put away and out of the sort of the walking zone of the living room, but also be like an actual desk that I could use with my, if I wanted to do mouse and keyboard and stuff. So that's what I use it now for. I roll it around the apartment if I just honestly just want to change where my computer is. And also I can roll it out and set up my virtual reality setup so I can track in a wider space.
And so the one that you are suggesting that you have, a Peerington cart, is that at the right height for a standing desk, or do you still have to kind of build up a little bit higher?
I'd say this is about, it's a little low for me. I'm about 6 foot one and I have to spread my legs a little bit. If I were probably 5'10", I think it would be perfect. So I do have to squat a little bit, and there is a pull out tray for an extra, like for a keyboard. And, that's even a little lower. But I tend to like that just to keep my hands low. Even though I think, I don't know the correct angle of the, you're supposed to keep your wrists.
Right. But of course you could always add some books or something or whatever, board to make it higher if you had to.
Yeah. And I like it a lot because it sort of constrains the desk space so you can't just pile stuff up.
Yeah, that's cool.
It looks like it has a power cord strip attached to it as well.
Yeah. So that's basically how I plug in my monitor and everything. And so it's really, the cart is one plug or unplug away from just moving it across the room. which I really like. And it has little locking feet, which I use when I'm not moving around. And I think the best part is like the price for what you're getting is really, really great.
So it's $140 or so.
Yeah. And it comes in the mail.
It is.
It comes in the mail. Yeah.
That's nice.
Free shipping.
It's got a nice industrial look too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I guess, the aesthetic I was going for when I was making this apartment is I was getting a bunch of like things on wheels. There's a couple IKEA. Mm-hmm. I guess that's a look.
Do you stick your feet underneath the cart when you work on it? Like, is it?
Yeah.
How do you do that when you're typing?
I'm trying to think. I do put my feet. There's like sort of three tiers of this cart. I usually put them on the bottom, and I have like a cheap $5 chair I got from Goodwill. That's like a bar stool with like a very, it's like made of plastic. Then I tend to put my feet on the sort of base of that chair too. Most of the time I'm standing though, and the other great thing is that like I can't stand for very long. So if I want to play a video game, there's sort of like a built-in time limit where I just get physically tired. otherwise, I could go forever, honestly. So it's almost like a built-in. It's great design to have a standing desk and play video games.
Yeah. What VR video game do you like the most right now?
I think VR video game, the best one for me is, I think, either Super Hot or Beat Saber. I mean, those are the two popular ones. Mm-hmm. The Beat Saber is basically Guitar Hero, but you slice with lightsabers in the direction to the beat.
That's fun. We have Beat Saber over here. My daughter has a VR setup, and it's really good exercise. She does it like an hour a day, and it's like she's like sweating and panting.
Yeah. Have you tried Pistol Whip?
I haven't. But what is that?
That's I guess the next thing after Beat Saber for kind of a calisthenic dodging, you know, but it's a little bit more complicated. There's more maneuvers. Just slice, instead of just slicing with the lightsabers, you kind of have to throw things, and there's more movement, moving around a little bit more.
What's the game where you have to like move really slowly, and if you move quickly, like
Hot Shot,
Super Hot.
Super Hot.
Yeah, that's a cool idea.
Have you tried that one?
Yeah, that's like the game that I show all my friends who come over to the apartment, and it's like I probably like must be 10 videos I can make a compilation of everyone cowering in fear as they dodge bullets, and it's the funniest thing to watch for me because you're basically in a Matrix scenario where as you move, time moves forward, and the faster you move, the faster time moves, and people are shooting at you, and you can dodge the bullets, and it's just hilarious to watch a newcomer in.
That sounds cool.
All right. So Tywin, tell us about, you have two other little things I like to hear about. Tell us about the removal app.
Yeah, so this is my fourth tool. It's a website service called remove.bg. BG as in background, I think. And what you do is you upload an image, say like a profile photo, and it's a really smart AI that is specifically tuned to read humans in human form and remove the background behind it. And what's really amazing is it does hair really well. So if you have fine detail, it can actually retain that hair. What it spits out is like a downloadable file that just has a PNG with transparency.
Wow.
Transparent background. And is it for free?
It's for free for about 10 of them. And then they start showing ads, I think between every, at least last time I used it, between every other one. For me, honestly, I kind of use it once or twice because I like to make, in Slack, you can make a little emojis, custom emojis. So I take images of coworkers and create custom emojis for them. And so that's my main use case. They do have a Photoshop plugin. So you can use it directly within Photoshop, and that costs money. And there you can do unlimited, also any size canvas that you want.
So it's in the Photoshop plugin, it must not be you. I mean, it's not, where's the AI coming from?
I believe it's a Photoshop plugin. It's basically like just embedded web page where you you're still uploading the image.
I see. So it's just a Photoshop interface.
It's an interface. Kind of. It's not actually doing the AI on board. I believe it's all done in the cloud still.
Well, that would be very, very useful because I've had lots of photos, backgrounds removed, but I send them off to Upwork to, workers somewhere in the world who do it very, very fast and very reasonably. But they're, for all I know, maybe they're using this.
Possibly.
Yeah, they probably are.
Yeah, right. So Taiwan, the last one, the bonus tool that you have is actually something I've used, and it's worth talking about. So tell us about it.
So the last tool is called Team Viewer. It's a way to remotely control a computer from another computer. And I think what's amazing about it is A, that it always seems to work. And B, for me, it's super low latency. So I can, in my use case, I was homesick one day and I needed to finish this video and send it out. So what I did is I, from my desktop at home, I team viewered into my desktop at work, and I can actually go into my video editing program, and it was low latency enough where I could actually scrub through the video and get a live preview and edit and ultimately export it in time.
That's really amazing.
The way I use it, or have been used, is I have a tech support guy. He's in Oakland, and he comes onto my computer and works on my computer from his house. And the way it works is you kind of send a little code, you give permission, he gets permission and he comes in, and he is, just takes over, and he's using my computer as if he's standing right there and sitting in front of it. And so as tech support, as help, it's really fantastic.
Yeah. And I think I've done that with you, Dad, I think, where you needed help with Adobe Premiere Pro. And it's a million times easier to describe something with a visual than just describe something verbally. And TeamViewer just sort of made what would be like an hour long help phone call to be like 10 minutes.
Yeah. So it's really good if you do need to help someone go through something. You can be right there on their computer and see exactly what they're seeing.
That's cool. Taiwan, we have a few minutes left to talk, and I'm just interested in computational photography. I don't know really much about it. And I've heard that term, but maybe you could just tell me what it is and why you like it and kind of what you use it for.
Yeah, sure. Preface this is mostly an interest of mine. I don't generate too much computational photography. I think the only genre of computational photography that I actually partake in is something called photogrammetry, which I can speak to more.
Okay.
And that's basically the taking multiple photos of a scene or object and using those photos as the data points to generate a computer 3D model of the scene or object. And I think my interest in it is that photography is typically seen as this flat, two-dimensional representation that sort of flattens the meaning of the scene. And I think computational photography just for me represents this whole other more dimensional spatial way of thinking of the world. And that's something that I'm just really interested in right now.
It's also it's a very broad term that encompasses the kinds of things Taiwan was just talking about, and a lot of kind of digital effects in some ways are digital or computational photography. But it's also suggesting that in fact a lot of the functions that big lenses and big glass and heavy equipment used to do is being done more by software. So the iPhone 11 with its three lenses is basically it's doing the work of a huge big camera through computation, and it's also algorithm is figuring out and calculating things instead of having the glass calculate them, And so it's replacing the physics of the photography with computation. And that's the broadest sense of the word.
Okay. That's thanks. That makes sense.
But right now it can be, you know, it can be used like what we're just talking about, the AI removal, removing backgrounds with AI. That's computational photography. You know, special effects, the deep fakes, that's computational photography as well.
Okay. So it's a very broad field.
It is a broad field. And I think a few examples are like on the iPhone again, which is a great example of it, is when you take a photo of someone and you want the background to be blurred out, that usually previously required a big physical glass lens to produce that effect. And now people are able to do it on smaller and smaller cameras. And like, for me, I have like all these questions that I think I've talked to you, Dad, about, just like what that means for photography and what that, like, so like what would like autocorrect in photography look like if it tells you to recompose an image a certain way because other people took it this way as well.
Right. So what Tyron was saying was that in the old days, you would blur the background through physics. You know, the big lens would, really fast lens with a big aperture could keep the background out of focus. And now they take a picture and it's all in focus, but then the computer basically figures out what it is, the background, and then just blurs it computationally. So that's, to the, you know, iPhone 11, that's what it's doing, is it makes it look like it's done with this very expensive big glass camera, kind of images that we've been trained to believe and that cameras see. And they do that again, just with bits, taking a really in focus image and then just deciding what's the background and blurring it. So thanks Tywin for being here, and we enjoyed your tools.
It was great talking with you guys. Thanks for getting me on.
Hey everybody, it's your co-host Mark, and I wanted to let you know that we have a lot more going on here in Cool Tools than just this podcast. We have our flagship website where we review a new tool every day. That's at cool-tools.org. We also have 4 different newsletters. We have this podcast. We have a YouTube channel where we review tools. And if you like what you hear and see and read, the best way to help us out is by going to our Patreon page at patreon.com/cooltools and donate at any level you wish. You can even contribute $1 a month, and that would mean a lot to us. The money that you give us will go towards paying for our transcribing costs, editing videos, and editing the podcast. It goes towards paying contributors who write the reviews for us. It goes towards our equipment costs, our hosting costs, and it supports our very small company of 3 people. This week, I wanted to give a shout out to some of our Patreon supporters who have been giving us at least $2 a month. And if you give us $2 a month, we'll give you a shout out online. And this week, I would like to thank Michael Sacochia, Molly Starr, M. Velderman, Opposable Thumbs, Pamela Cooley, Patrick Weyer, Paul Hosey, Randy Fisher, Stuart Burroughs Brand, Synaptic Sam, Therese Schwartz, Tom Hawkins, Tom Markham, What Bear, Javier Pangolin, David Lang, Eric Byers, Sean Hartley, Stephen Powell, Greg Lichtscheidt, John Hobson, Adam Bristol, Adam Naher, Anonymous, Bill Kempthorne, Bruce I. Niles, Chris Woodruff, C. Kolos, Daryl Flynn, Egg Fleegoff, Eric Hanschrau, Eric Hoover, Godfrey Saldana, Jay Skiles, John M. Larson, Jude Galligan, Kenneth Gilman, and Lucas Frank. Thank you very much for supporting the show, and we will see you next week.